it's that simple concept. It's like you know, the whole time that you're sitting there doing 1 hour of billing, you're not building a team. You're not building a business. You're not doing business development. You're not getting out there. You're not building that law firm that you love. You doing that 1 hour of billing is you doing the urgent work, not the important.
Right. So instead of being a manager to a bunch of specialists, you want to become over time a manager to managers. So other managers report to you.
You're listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast, where each guest shares actionable, practical ideas with you on how to get more clients, expand your reach, and grow your law firm's revenue and profit. Here's your host, Sasha Burson.
Hi there. I have a small but really meaningful favor to ask you. You know, I watch At The Stats on our YouTube channel and Spotify channel, wherever most people listen and watch our podcast. And I see that over 80% of everybody who listens to it regularly is not a subscriber. I'm asking you to subscribe to this channel. And the reason for that is my mission and the mission of my team is to help as many small law firm owners to learn how to transform their law firms into better businesses, and so they in turn enjoy better lives. When you hit subscribe button, you tell these platforms that this is content worth listening, worth viewing, and they in turn will show it to many other small law firm owners and hopefully help me fulfill our mission of helping them create a better business and enjoy better lives. So would you please do me this favor? It would mean the world to me. And hit the subscribe button. And my promise to you is that I will continue to work hard at creating good content with practical ideas that help you and your teams grow better law firms. Thank you. Welcome to another great podcast of Grow Law Firm. I have an amazing guest with me here today. He is hailing from south of Spain. Dan Warburton is a law firm growth consultant specializing in profitable delegation. Then I'm going to explain this simply. You help law firm owners work less while making more. Now, most lawyers are incredibly skeptical people. The second they heard what I just said, their BS meter just went off. Like, bam, bam, bam. There's no way I can work less and make more. Now, I've been a business owner operator for 23 years. I know how this works, but I think to the hundreds of law firm owners that I've spoken over the years, maybe thousands, to most of them, number of hours equals revenue equals profitability.
Mm.
Explain how that is not necessarily true.
I will explain more than it's not necessarily true. I will explain that it's actually a complete lie. As a human being, you're only able to stay awake a certain amount of hours and work a certain amount of hours. And in that 1 hour that you complete, 1 hour of billing, you can earn, say, let's just keep it simple, $500 for your law firm. But let's say that you're already working 60, 70 hours a week. To increase your profits, what are you going to do? Start working throughout the nights? Get it to 80, 90? How far are you willing to go to earn that extra profit? One of my clients, before he spoke to me, was working 100 hours a week, completely exhausted and burnt out. Now imagine instead of you billing for that 1 hour, you had 10 associates or 10 attorneys in-house each billing 1 hour. But instead of them being able, you've been able to charge them out at $500 an hour, it was even half that, say $250 an hour, and you got 10 of those. How much is that in that 1 hour that's come into the firm? $2,500. So would you rather work that 1 hour yourself and bring in 500 for the firm, or have a team of 10 each bringing in an hour for that firm, totaling 2,500. So you got the choice now. Do you work that 1 hour and only make 500, or do you not work that hour and make 2,500? Isn't it that simple?
So it is very simple, but your expertise is in profitable delegation. And I think that many, not all, but many law firm owners graduate from doing exclusively billable work. In fact, if you own a law firm, chances are you're wearing multiple hats. Doing billable work is just part of what you do. You also have to do bazillion other things, which is very unfortunate. Yeah. And this is where it gets really hard to let go of. Really hard to let go of. So let's talk about that. How do you let go of the 17 million different things that anyone as a business owner, law firm owner, et cetera, start doing?
Yeah, well, the first thing is, you know, studying the Eisenhower Matrix that was featured by Steve Covey in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, which is where he met this guy called Eisenhower, and based on what he said, created this matrix, which is a quadrant. You've got a square split into quarters. And basically on the top left, you've got things that are both urgent and important. And those things you have to do straight away. Then you have other things that are not as important, but seem urgent. And the idea is that you need to be looking at, is the work that you're doing urgent or important? Because if you keep doing what's urgent, you end up building a law firm that causes you to have to keep doing what's urgent. Whereas important stuff is work that has you build the law firm that you'd love to own one day. In other words, business development, going out after the right clients, learning to delegate, leadership and management. How do you transfer responsibility from your shoulders onto the team members' shoulders? Because until they feel responsible for your success and the success of your law firm, they are quietly quitting. They're pretending to be busy. They're pretending to be worried about everything, but really they're nowhere near as worried as you because it's your business. They never will be. So the only way that you can have them successfully build a profitable firm for you is if you successfully transfer the weight of responsibility from your shoulders onto theirs. And so to bring this back to basics and to be able to give you, the listener, something that you can implement straight away, the first thing I do with my clients is I have them schedule regular one-on-one calls with their heads of department or with the lawyers that have a team that manage underneath them. So let me give an example. There was one of my clients. He was the same one. He was working over 100 hours a week. He had a small team of 12. And the first thing we did was to schedule regular one-on-one calls with his key team members. So they were the heads of department. One of them had a team of three under them. The other one was seniors without any, but he had regular one-on-one calls with each one of those. Then the idea was that he was to say to each of them, unless necessary, don't contact me outside of this one-on-one session. And during this one-on-one session, bring to me all your challenges and all of your problems that come up throughout the week. And we will go through them one by one. That one-on-one time is then to be non-negotiable. In other words, it must happen every single week at the same time with that individual. And what my client learned was that in that one-on-one session, having his mobile phone on silent and giving that committed one-on-one time to that senior member, he could show them the processes that he was going through to carry out the higher, more expensive billing that he was carrying out. And at first, it was painful and it's slow, but bit by bit, each individual started to think like him, started to understand the work like him, and he was then able in that regular one-on-one time to make clear requests. So the first thing is regular one-on-one meetings. The second thing is then clear requests. Making a clear request includes three things. What do you want done needs to be measurable. Number two needs to have a time frame agreed. If you ask somebody to do something but you don't agree a deadline, that's not a request, because then you're worried, are they doing it, are they not, should I text them, should I call them? And if you've got lots of agreements with everybody but you haven't got a deadline for when things aren't to be done, that leaves you very, very stressed because you don't have to handle clients or what to say to them either. So what do you want doing, the time frame you want it done by, and finally has agreement, both of you, before you end the meeting or the call or move to the next topic, has agreement on exactly what needs to be done and by when. Then if you've got the one-on-one call set up, what happens is you're never worrying, like, when am I going to get to speak to that head of department again or to that senior associate? Because you know you've got that time booked with them every single week. And so when you see them make a mistake or they don't do something well, don't step over anything. Because the minute you step over something and let it continue, that mistake will perpetuate. And if you keep stepping over things and ignoring things and just not bothering holding people to account on them, that's step number three, accountability, then the mistakes continue and it just gets worse and you can't manage anything. So then what you do is you write down, right, they were late on this. They didn't complete this file properly. They didn't speak to their client well. This email dated this. That wasn't answered well. Then when it comes to that one-on-one, you then say to them, hi, thanks so much for being on time for this call. So there's another tip, acknowledgement. Always acknowledge your team for their efforts and what they're doing. And then say, so look, I want to give you the opportunity to get the career progression you'd love. I want you to have the opportunity of really going places. And so I've got some things I want to point out that I think you can do even better than you already have. And that's where you then point out the things that you've noticed them do. And the art is rather than trying to be their employer, be their mentor, be someone that stands for their success, be the one that stands for them to really go places as a lawyer. And if you then create the opportunities where if they meet their billing targets, doors are going to open for them, they're going to feel like listening to you has something in it for them rather than you just trying to dictate and tell them what to do. You then have this collaborative teamwork where they become inspired with what becomes possible for them through you kindly dedicating this time each week to support them. And what happens is each week, as you handle every mistake they make and you ask them, what can you see is missing that you can put in place to make sure this doesn't happen again? Then they become an investigator, a problem solver. They start to think like you and look for solutions instead of coming to you with problems. And bit by bit, as you solve every mistake that they make, week by week by week, you find they're not making the mistakes. The workflows are being carried out exactly as you agree from beginning all the way to the end, right to the money being in the bank. They require you less. They text you less. They ask you less often for stuff. They start to run your firm and they start to feel responsible for what they need to do because they've had that experience of being on a regular one-on-one call with you. Then you can decrease those one-on-one calls from, say, an hour a week to half an hour a week. And then it gets really fun. You can start reviewing work with them before it's released to clients. So you have them, you know, a clear request might be, Jack, can you get this to me by 12 p.m. Thursday? And I want you to have this completed in full like we've done these other things or by following this procedure. Is that okay? Great. Can I just check? What have I asked you to do? You've asked me to have this with you by Thursday? Yeah, great. What time? 12. Great. And what do you need to do? Follow these steps. Brilliant. You've got it. That's a clear request made. Then when it gets to Thursday, 12 p.m., you're not stressing, you're not worried. You know, you just check your emails. Is the work there ready for you to review? If it's not, you can pick up the phone and say, hey, Jack, we had this agreement. If it's there, you can then review it, have a look. First, mark out in red the bits that you want doing and add notes. Save that as a copy. Then go and complete it and then release it to the client if you need to. Or if you've got time and you've got the one-on-one, bring that document up or that work and share your screen. And bit by bit with that senior associate, point out the bits that you've highlighted in red and ask him, why do you think I've highlighted that in red? You see, you're not giving them the answer. You're asking them to tell you what do they see in what you've marked. So you're getting them to think for themselves. Then bit by bit, you amend that document or you amend that piece of work. And if you do that collaboratively with them, they're getting very high level training. And it might seem painful and awkward to do at first. But what happens is the next time they send you that piece of work, you'll find there'll be less mistakes and you do it again and do it again and do it again. And in the end, they can carry out this work seamlessly. But here's the really fun part. When you know they can deliver work directly to the client without you having to get involved, you can then make a request that they become the gate for all work before it's released to clients from maybe the juniors or the middleweights. So now you've got somebody who you can then make a request of to have one-on-one calls with each of the middleweights and the juniors below them to check their work before it's released to the client and to carry out the same procedure as you have to elevate their performance as a fee earner. So when you put all this together and you make it the whole of your firm be based around mentoring and supporting your colleagues, that's when you start to delegate profitably. That's when you start to have a reliable team that's hitting their hours of targets. I say 100 hours each per month is a great target if you've got the classic law firm model. And with that, your time starts to decrease And then with that free time, you can use that for recruiting, going out to find our new ideal team members. You can spend a little bit more time on somebody that might need a bit more training. You could go out on nice lunches, dinners, business development, go and close massive deals. This whole time, you've got a team of people that's effectively running your firm for you and making you more profitable than you've ever been. That client I was telling you about, after working with me for 6 months, he made over $707,000, clear profit, just between him and another partner, and with only going from a team of 12 to 15 in 6 months.
What was their profit prior to that for a 6 month period?
I can't remember. I just remember
substantial lift.
Yeah, 89% increase it was.
89% increase.
Okay. 89% profit increase in 6 months. Yep. And that's just by carrying out the fundamentals of these procedures that I've just outlined here.
Yeah, I am a big fan of what you just laid out. In fact, one of the things that have troubled me for the last 20 some years since I became a business owner, how fast the life is moving in front of our eyes because we do so many things. Mm. One of my unofficial mentors taught me that if you want to slow things down, you have to do less. Mm. And to do less, you have to find well-qualified people who are going to take over the functions where you do not have a unique ability. Like if you're the one who has the unique ability, you're the only one in your company who can do this, that's what you do. Mm. Everything else, other people can do. If they can do it at 80% quality score of what you can accomplish, or better than 80%, you delegate it. And what you talked about is you're training them as a replacement to you. So instead of being a manager to a bunch of specialists, you want to become over time a manager to managers. So other managers report to you. It's a lot easier to work with if you have five departments. And the normal business usually has like five main departments because there are five functions, right? There's marketing, there's sales, there's the service that you provide, there's HR, and then there is leadership/management. So five department heads, if you're the CEO of your law firm, you're only working with those five people. Now, each one of them may have 6-10 people reporting to them, but you don't talk to all of those specialists. You only work with the managers. But to raise managers, you either have to hire managers or you have to train specialists to become managers. So you talked about training specialists to become managers so that they can replace you, so you can stop doing so damn much, so your life stops moving like it's just one blur, which my life has been like that for many, many years. In fact, until last year, 2023, that was the year when I, for the first time, made a very conscious, humongous effort to fire myself from some key positions that I was in.
Yeah,
so my
brilliant.
Life can start. Like, I had up to 13 meetings per day. Many of those went on for an hour plus. So I was that guy who was working 80 plus hours a week.
Yeah.
And my wife and I talked about having another baby. And I'm like, nope. That can't be. It just cannot continue this way. I'm going to have to make some dramatic changes. And I've hired qualified people. I trained them and they have replaced me. And now I'm down to maybe 4 meetings per day on average, from 10 to 13. And that took approximately 9 months. So what you're saying, been there, done that, it's very doable if you commit to that change. If you don't, you will be tired, ready for retirement, and I'm like, man, where did the last 40 years go?
I mean, more to the point is law firm owners that don't delegate away their workload end up one day with only either of two choices. Do you either keep working such exhausting hours until the day you physically can't because you're just too old, exhausted, or ill and unwell with something, you know? Or do you walk away from a law firm that you spent years passionately building? That's it. You know,
or dispassionately building. I've seen a lot of dispassionately law firm
by the end of it.
Lost passion. Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course. You know, and that there is no other way that I know of other than having other people profitably run the firm for you.
So I think the most, and when you look at stats, I think average small law firm size in the United States is something like $500,000-$600,000 in gross revenue, which is about two attorneys.
Mm.
So for them, as they may be listening to this, they may be thinking to themselves, I wish this problem was at the top of my list, but it's not.
Mm.
How do you go through this journey from 500,000? And what you're talking about is probably a law firm, and I'm only using dollars because I'm here, from 500,000 US dollars to maybe $5 million. Because at $5 million in gross revenue, if you are normally profitable, not exceptionally profitable, but normally profitable, you're doing 20% net profit pre-tax, $1 million.
Mm.
Your life can be radically different at $5 million than it is at $500,000. But how do you, if you are starting at this $500,000, what are the first few steps you recommend your clients to take to significantly improve their life by working less and actually making more?
There's three levels of management and leadership, level one, two, and three. The first level is leading and managing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between leadership and management, the leadership is the inspiration, is the why you do what you do. It's the motivation. It's the thing that inspired you, that made you want to become a lawyer. It comes out of that. The management is then bringing that ethereal, pie in the sky, crazy, inspired feeling, thinking into grounded, consistent, managed action. So the first thing is your own discipline needs to be razor sharp. You need to schedule when you're going to work and when you're not going to work and what hours you're going to bill and what hours you're not going to bill. And in that, as you said, you need to be including those five different departments, including marketing, business development. What were the other departments you were saying there?
Intake, operations, HR, and management, like leadership.
That's it. That's mm-hmm. it. And obviously, the less people, the less HR you need. So that's hardly needing anything at first. But the idea is that you schedule what you're going to do when, and you move away from trying to be reactive and rather be proactive. Reactive is where you don't schedule anything in. You leave yourself available for anything and any client requests, and you're ready to jump up and stop what you're doing to start something else. And that just leaves you in this, it's a bit like once you've tripped over the first step of a staircase, that's it. You're falling down the whole staircase and you can never pick yourself back up. Whereas proactive is where you set these very clear boundaries as to when you'll work, when you won't work. And you say to your client, look, I really need this doing by tomorrow. I really need this doing by tomorrow. If they're saying that to you, what you say to them is, I get it and I get your situation and I am not able to do this until Thursday morning. Can I introduce you to somebody else that I know that can do that for you? So you want to build up an alliance of other people that do the work that you don't do and they do the work that you do. And so this way, you can always leave that phone call on a good note. And more than likely, whoever you referred that work to should hopefully be referring work back to you. But the point is when you do it this way, you get very organized and then you can look at your pricing. What can you be charging for what you do? For such clear communication, for such a high professional service that you deliver, how much can you be charging for it? And if you're booked up personally in your law firm for more than a month, then it's time to increase your rates. It's as simple as that. And you want to get to a point.
Great insight.
Yeah, you want to get to a point, I would say, where you're, it depends the work that you do. Some work takes a lot to quote for and to put a price out there. The longer it takes, the less sales you can afford to lose, right? But if you're in a certain sector like conveyancing, for instance, you can give a quote for that quickly. You want to be raising your prices, and it's all right if you get enough work coming in that you only need to close one of every five to be properly busy. So you can then be charging a lot, get used to more people saying no, but the few that say yes are from really quality clients that pay really good money. So it's a balancing act. But the whole basis of this is get disciplined in level one, management and leadership, managing and leading yourself. The second level, once you've got that down, you've got yourself really disciplined and organized, is then start managing, leading and managing others. In other words, look at what is the work that you do that's decently profitable that you know you could get somebody else, at least as a middleweight to senior, to join you. Don't go employing juniors when you're starting out or at this point. It's the biggest mistake. People think, oh, I'll get a junior because they cost less. But no, you already don't have the time as it is to effectively train and empower somebody. So why the hell would you go taking on a junior when you're already trying to fit these five different departments you've covered, right? So go bite the bullet, pay more. Look at your numbers. If you're managing to bill 100 hours, right, what would happen if you gave half of those, 50 of those hours away to somebody else? How much could you charge them out at? Let's say you're $500 an hour. You get a senior in and charge $350 an hour. What is 50 times 350? That's your month. That's how much you've got to pay them. Now, if they did those 50 hours, obviously that's then the net revenue that's coming in before expenses. But based on that and the wages that they're going to cost you, you should be very quickly able to see, hang on a minute, I'm going to be profitable, more profitable than I am now, even with just that first hire, if I do this properly, whilst I cut my billing hours in half. You know, it's all about the numbers. If the numbers add up, the numbers don't lie. It doesn't matter whether you feel high or scared or emotional about it. The numbers tell the truth. And if you've got those hours coming in through the door, you know you can get those hours going out through the door with a colleague. And then looking at how much they're going to cost you, it's a no-brainer to then go into and employ that middleweight or senior. And that's the kind of way of thinking and going forward. And then the advanced stage of leadership and management is then leading and managing managers and leaders to manage and lead others. That's the level three.
Brilliant. Starts with self-managing.
Yeah.
Then managing specialists and then managing other leaders or managing other managers.
And then managing those specialists to manage and lead others. Yeah.
So brilliant. I think, and this concept is so incredibly hard to implement for ladies and gentlemen who are used to managing very, very small law firm and doing the job of an attorney, is that if you want to grow a business, a legal business, you need to fire yourself from practicing law as fast as humanly possible.
Yeah.
What do you mean? What do you mean fire myself from this? This is what I was trained to do. I'm like, but if you want to practice law, you can do so with fewer headaches working for somebody else. You'll probably make adequate amount of money working for someone else and you will not have those extra headaches. Now, if you decide to build your own law firm, you have to become a CEO of this thing or partner with someone who has the business acumen that would allow them to be the manager of the or the CEO of the law firm and thus allow to build a valuable business. But most lawyers, even very successful lawyers who I've met, and when I say very successful, $20, $30, $40 million annual revenue, still practice law a little bit. The guys and gals who usually stop practicing law and they're like, I've been done with it for a long time, 100 million plus. And I'm like, any mistakes looking back? And they're like, yeah, I should have quit practicing law way sooner.
Yeah.
Way sooner.
Yeah.
But they miss it then.
Yeah, it's that simple concept. It's like you know, the whole time that you're sitting there doing 1 hour of billing, you're not building a team. You're not building a business. You're not doing business development. You're not getting out there. You're not building that law firm that you love. You doing that 1 hour of billing is you doing the urgent work, not the important work. And if you keep doing the urgent work, you build a law firm that constantly relies on you to keep doing the urgent work and you just get stuck in it. I meet many law firm owners that in their 50s and 60s, exhausted, tired, burnt out. And in England, certainly, there's a massive economy of mergers and acquisitions. Mm-hmm. Why? Because the law firm owners never learn to delegate away their workload. But those that do, like my client I spoke about earlier, his firm went from being back after a year, he then contacted me and he got his firm reevaluated. Before he worked with me, his firm was worth 3.5 million. A year later, it was worth $8.5 million. So in a year, he added $5 million in value to his firm. Now, how did he do that? He did it because the law firm no longer relied on him to keep operating. So to an outside buyer, the firm is now worth so much more.
Yeah, that's another brilliant insight. And again, for most people, so hard to wrap their minds around it. And once they do, so hard to make this transition from being a specialist to being the top manager in the firm, because no training, different mindset.
Yeah, I call it, you can either be a technician or you can be a business owner. And most are stuck being a technician in their law firm instead of an owner of the business. So their law firm continually relies on them to be a technician, to be a doer, instead of being an owner, an orchestrator, a leader.
This is such an important concept, and here's why. Moments ago, you mentioned that in UK, there's a lot of M&A activity in the legal space. Mm. Unlike US, there's not very much of M&A activity in the legal space. However, there is one state that already got deregulated, meaning a non-lawyer can now own and operate a law firm.
I've heard
another
this.
State is going through similar deregulation. So what's going to happen in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years? The legal industry is going to go through very similar change as the healthcare industry went through here in the United States. I told you earlier, I moved to US 30 years ago. Mm. 30 years ago, vast majority of doctors were private practitioners. Today, I don't know what the numbers are, but I believe private practice are now in the minority, and most doctors are hospitalists, as in they're within a hospital network. They may look like they have an independent office with a bunch of other doctors, but the logo that's above the door is of a hospital network. They're now part of the hospital. How that came to be? Hospitals and private equity groups decided that this can be a profitable business if you start buying up small private practices. That industry is not regulated the same way as legal industry. You can actually operate a healthcare business without being a medical doctor. You cannot, in 49 states as of today, we're recording this early 2024, you cannot own and operate a law firm if you're not a lawyer. In 49 out of 50 states. Once that changes, me being a business guy, if I have a backing of a private equity company, I understand through and through how law firms operate. What am I going to do? I'm going to buy up a whole bunch of solo or very small law firms. I'm going to make a marketing machine because I'm a marketer. Work really hard for those what used to be 10 separate locations, 15, 20, 80. And I'm going to start dominating those space, and I start dominating those geographical markets, and I can buy more and more and more and more of them. By the way, the reason why I will be able to buy more and more and more, and I'm not saying this is what I'm going to do, but other private equities, and I'm not a private equity, but maybe one day I will be, they will do it because the bigger they get in each geographical market, the harder they're going to squeeze on those that are still private practitioners.
Yeah.
The harder they squeeze, the harder they push on those, the easier it will be for those who are in private practice to say yes to selling themselves to those larger entities now. That change is coming. We just don't know the timing of it. It could be 5 years. It can be 10 years. It can be 20 years. If you are listening to this and you're in your 40s, the probability that you're going to see this seismic change is very high. If you're in your 60s, probably not. It's just that. So everything that you said, creating the most valuable law firm, I always think of it like go big. Go big as early as possible, and you have to delegate, and you have to build out a team. And when you do, you will become either a very juicy acquisition target, as in you can sell your thing and go retire, or build another one in a different state. Or your wall around your law firm will get so high and so strong that they will not be able to push you around because you will own a part of the market share.
That's it.
That's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I like the way you think.
Yeah. It because it's happened before. It's very foreseeable.
Yeah. I can see you've seen that happen around you before. A good
friend of mine built an HVAC company, so heating and air conditioning company. And as they were building it, private equity firms were rolling into that market.
Right.
And he was a very attractive target for acquisition, very attractive. Mm. And they came to him and they made him an offer that he couldn't refuse. And that offer was very simple. They're like, listen, we're buying up everyone around you. You can join us. You can compete against us. By the way, if you join us on our terms, we're going to make those terms very lucrative. And you're going to continue to own just a much smaller piece of a larger pie because we're going to give you a share in the entire private equity company. It's called Second Bite at the Apple. And he was like, how much are you going to give me? They gave him a ton, millions. And he only built it. It took him like 5 or 7 years to get there. And they're like, we're going to give you millions. We're going to give you earn out. You're going to be here for 3 years. We're going to pay you salary. It's going to be substantial and bonus for growing this thing even faster. Now with our resources, not your resources, our resources.
Yeah.
And should you choose to stay with us past 3 years, we're going to make it incredibly lucrative for you also. And the guy's like, this is a no lose for me. The only way I can lose is to say no.
Yeah.
Because then he would start losing. He surely said yes. Healthcare, same thing happened. Plumbing companies, so many service businesses. And law firms are just another service business.
Yeah, of course.
It's going to happen whether we like it or hate it. It's going to happen. You can accept the change and roll with it, or you can fight against it. But it's like, I don't know what it was called in Britain, but here we used to have yellow pages, phone books.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people stuck to those phone books advertising through 2010s.
Hmm.
Lost a lot of momentum.
Yeah.
Their competitors would overtake them because they want the internet route.
The problem is with a competitor being able to come in and buy a law firm is that they often can't if the law firm still relies so much on the law firm owner.
100%.
You know?
And nobody wants to buy you.
Nobody wants to buy it. So even if that opportunity came along to you as a law firm owner and you hadn't learned to delegate away your workload profitably to the team, at least 50% of it, you're going to be in that situation where you can only work yourself until the day you die from exhaustion or walk away from something you spent years building.
100%. And this is why there's very, very little M&A activity in the US market across law firms.
Yeah.
Because what are you going to buy? A desk? A computer, a bookcase.
Yeah. That's it.
You don't have anything to buy.
It's funny in England.
Been operating it.
But then in England there is a lot of M&A because the law firm owners haven't delegated away their workload. So they've got lots of returning clients. They've got a good name for themselves, but the law firm owner doesn't know what to do next. He's too old. He wants to stop, but he doesn't know how to stop.
But that has to be like a very specific, either a generalist lawyer who does a lot of different practice areas, and in US that is not common anymore. Right. So we do not have general counselors who will do a divorce, intellectual property.
There is in England. They have three, five, seven departments, each one doing a different sector of law.
So that's larger law firms. But most law firms in the US are small. So small, here's how it breaks down. As of 2019, one third of all law firms were solos. One lawyer. Now, there are 1,450,000 lawyers as of 2019. 1,350,000.
So much bigger than the UK.
It's huge.
The UK has, I think, nearly 11,000 law firms in total.
So
between
that's
between
like
solos and large.
That's like Chicago where I am.
Right? Well,
all right. So it's not that many, but so in Chicago, if you drop a pin in downtown Chicago, and if you know geography of Chicago, everything that's east is a lake. So you're mostly looking north, west, and south. If you drop a pin in downtown Chicago, and then you draw a radius, I think of 5 or 10 miles. I did this research many years ago. There were 517 law firms that only did personal injury cases.
Wow. Talk about
competition. If you look at the entire Chicagoland, which is like 11 million people, there are thousands of law firms in Chicago alone. In New York, it's a lot more law firms than Chicago. In LA, law firms than Chicago. It's huge.
It just really proves that if you want to get ahead, you know, there's a classic saying, if you want to succeed, do what no one else is doing. If you want to succeed, be the one that's willing to do what no one else is doing. And I'm telling you now, if you're listening to this and you're a law firm owner, it's learning management and leadership and how to have other people reliably hit their billing targets without you. That's 100%. It. That's the skill. There is no management and leadership in the legal sector, right? There just isn't.
Yeah. Correct.
There's not. Yeah. And so if you invest in this, like, this is definitely the way to get ahead.
Yeah. I sum it up in two words, business acumen. Most lawyers have tremendous legal acumen and relatively low business acumen. Yet, let me finish those stats. So 1/3 are solos, 450,000 people. 1/3 own and or work in law firms with between 2 and 10 attorneys.
Right.
That's another 450,000 people. Mm. And then the other third is God knows. We have M200 or M250, the 250 largest law firms, hundreds of thousands of lawyers in each law firm. We have so many lawyers work for different government entities, tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands, because every city council, every city, every village, every state, every branch of everything, federal, state, municipal, there are lawyers everywhere. But the self-employed kind of lawyers, or mostly self-employed kind of lawyers, are 2/3, 900,000 people. 900,000 people who are either completely self-employed or semi-self-employed because they work in very small law firms.
Yeah.
Who were not trained in business, so they have relatively low business acumen. And because of that, despite their brilliant minds, the potential to make money is here and to be successful is here, but the reality is usually somewhere around here.
Yeah. There's because at no stage in training to be a lawyer or being an associate, an attorney, to then becoming a partner, and even whilst a time as a partner, as a law firm owner, is anyone in the legal sector ever taught leadership and management?
Well, correct. It's but if you think about most professional licensees, right, like nobody teaches business, right? If you're a doctor, you're not taught business.
Yeah, I mean, you could call it business. I call it leadership and management. Sure. It's the ability to talk to human beings and to think creatively to solve problems and then have those other human beings go and carry out or solve those problems. And the thing I found is when I speak about leadership and management within the legal sector, it's very difficult for me to explain what it is or what it makes possible. A lawyer can think they know what it is and have an idea of what they is, but if they just strike it off as, oh, it's just that, if that's how you feel about it, then you haven't got it. Because leadership and management, once you understand how to skillfully guide others to operate in a way that's highly profitable, it's like opening an invisible door that's in front of you. I'm telling you now, it's like an invisible door. You think you know it. You think you understand it. And you've probably dismissed this. And maybe this might be the 10th time in 20 years where you've heard somebody say leadership and management. And now you're starting to think, maybe I should look at this again. Well, I'm telling you, it's like an invisible door that once you get it, it's like opening this door with a pathway to a completely new future of extraordinary success. More profit than you've ever earned whilst having a better quality of lifestyle than you've ever had at the same time. It's just magic. It really is.
Brilliant words. I hope that they do not fall on deaf ears, but sometimes you need to hear them tens of times.
We need to be ready, right?
I'm sick and tired of this shit. I'm going to turn my life around and here's how I'm going to do it, right? So the blueprint, some part of the blueprints, self-leadership. Without self-leadership, you do not need to worry about leadership of others. or leadership of managers, right?
Yeah. So you have to start. If you're disorganized, if your technology isn't up to date and you're not managing and leading yourself well, you can never do that for anybody else. And to really cut to it, what does that mean? It means doing and being how you say and do. So if you say you're going to be there at 9 p.m., you are there at 9 p.m. If you say you're going to have a file with somebody 4 p.m., you have it with them by 4 p.m. You do exactly as you speak out of your mouth. Only then have you got the ability to make an agreement with somebody for them to have something done for you by 4 p.m. and you have the right to hold them to account. You don't have the right to hold anybody to account until you are being your word first. That's point number one. That's the grounding of basic leadership management level one.
And would you say that the second point is focusing your time on important but non-urgent activities from Stephen Covey's book of Seven Habits?
A tip there. Focus, work out what is urgent versus important. What is urgent has you meet immediate demands for clients and things like that. But you can see that if you focus on that and only do that, you're only ever going to create a business or a firm that causes you to have to keep spinning around and around and around doing what is urgent.
Yep.
Make sure you're scheduling what is important as well and make that non-negotiable.
Well,
absolutely.
Important but not urgent. Important but not urgent.
Yes.
that's the big one. So I can tell you, this was the big change that I made last year. I no longer have anything on my calendar that's urgent.
Yeah,
not a single meeting. I can look back. My calendar is mapped out and color-coded for different departments because I do talk to people in my different departments. Not a single urgent meeting. Just doesn't happen.
Nice.
My phone. But by the way, here's how, like, if as you're listening to this, imagine the future, if this is not your current future, where your employees don't call you.
Yeah.
They don't email you. They rarely Slack you. Like, my team rarely Slacks me. Your calendar is well organized. Everything that I do is budgeted on the calendar. And my calendar is usually about 40, 50% pre-budgeted a week in advance. I know what's coming. There's not going to be an urgent meeting there. But it seriously took me 22 years of being a business owner operator to get to the point where I got sick and tired of what I was doing. And I was like, I'm firing myself. By the way, confirming everything that you said, the main premise there, we are more profitable now that I fired myself from busy work.
Yeah.
But by the way, I didn't start with a small team. Here we have 60 plus people. And by firing myself from busy work, we yet became even more profitable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you would do because you're then there and available to lead and advise and guide everyone in how to elevate their
performance and elevate their operations. Now I have time to think about bigger problems.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like what's the industry we're moving into? Who are the clients to go for now? What do we want to become known for in the industry? All these things you get time to actually focus on. Yeah,
It's amazing when you get that freedom. In fact, my partner is working, and I am not there yet, but my partner is working on working 3 days a week instead of five. The two other days, they're actually blocked out. And although they look like 3 days, that's the thinking time. It's the thinking time where you, on purpose, get out of your office. You're not looking at the monitor. You're not having a meeting. You're walking around the block and you're thinking. Nice. You're walking around the block and you're thinking. And you can keep on walking the whole day. And because your mind is not distracted by daily tasks, you will find those bigger problems to solve. And you will find those solutions. Obviously, you may have a question along the way and you'll call someone and be like, hey, I got a question about this. As you're trying to process a thought, a solution to a problem you had, like my partner and I would do this from time to time. And it's incredibly effective. I just didn't get there yet. He already kind of sort of did. His Tuesdays and Thursdays, you look at his calendar, they're just blacked out. Thinking days. He'll still cheat and he'll take a meeting here and there. He will. But one day he is going to be completely free of distractions 2 days a week. And people may think like, wow, that's like your employees will think that that's unfair. Like, why does the guy only work 3 days a week? But We learned this from Japanese management methodology, where the most valuable time in a Japanese corporation for a manager is when they stare out the window. So in certain corporations, you have to have a time block of 90 minutes per day when you just do this. You just look out the window. You are not allowed to look at your laptop computer. You're not allowed to look at your phone. And if your employee, if someone from your team walks by your office and they see you looking out the window, they know not to distract you, because that is the most valuable part of your day.
Wow. The
thinking time.
Yeah. Well, I've got an hour of yoga scheduled Monday to Friday.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's especially helpful being a parent to two young children.
Yeah. And I mean, you could say I'm contradicting myself, because I'm the consultant in my business that does this one-on-one work with my clients. But I limit myself to only working with 10 one-on-one clients at a time. So at the maximum, I only have 10 one-on-one calls a week with my existing clients.
How long is each call?
Usually up to an hour. I mean, in my programs, I leave myself, you know, contactable as and whenever by my 10 clients. Mm-hmm. So I'm really there for them. But I find they get everything they need in that one session a week. And usually by about the 6th or 9th month mark, we like to step it down to once every 2 weeks, because they've really got in the swing of things and really got things rolling. They need less from me.
That's amazing. Speaking of clients and coaching, if somebody listens to this or watches this podcast recording, they may be thinking 89% lift in profitability, 6 months over 6 months, and the valuation lift from $3.5 million, I assume pounds, to
that's USD. That was
USD, US okay. Company. So from $3.5 million valuation to $8.5 million valuation, it's a huge lift. I may want similar results. How would they find you? What's a good step? Like, how do they start with you?
They can go to danwarburton.com. And when you go there, straight away, you'll see you can take a 60-second profitable delegation assessment. And what that does is it will show you what it is based on how you answer those multiple choice questions. It's called 60 seconds because you can do it in 60 seconds. Most people do it in about 2.5 minutes. But then after that, you can see where your strengths, weaknesses are, what you need to focus on to elevate your skills in delegation. But also you get added to my law firm owners club. So then you receive an insight every other week, and you'll get opportunities to write to me, ask me questions, anything like that. Or you can just contact me, and depending on my availability, I'm always open to sharing ideas.
Brilliant. Dan Warburton, it was such a pleasure to have you here on this podcast.
Fantastic. I've really loved it. And I'm not sure who's learned more from who here. Thanks, Sasha.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast. If you liked the ideas shared in this episode, help a fellow lawyer out by sharing a link to the episode. This episode is powered by the team of experts in client attraction, growlawfirm.com. Do you want a complimentary growth plan for your law firm? Request it at growlawfirm.com/blueprint.